Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Today is Easter. It is a day that is celebrated world over for something that men and women call the resurrection. Billions celebrate it. Very few know what it really means, and almost none have achieved the fruit of resurrection. That resurrection exists is evident. If you look out on this spring day, you can see resurrection. You can see the burgeoning buds on the trees as they start to make their cycle. You can see the grass as it pounds its way through soil that's been hard for the winter. You can watch the leaves begin to open and unfurl themselves to become sails for the sun, to capture its energy. You can, if you're able to, see the girth of small trees increase themselves. You can see the sprigs that pop out of these things that give the tree its next form, which is its resurrection from winter to spring. And the point that I'm making here at the top of this Easter talk is that we can see evidence of rebirth. Spring, the time of year itself, is a kind of secret invitation, a kind of promise that's put out before human beings who, because of the way the world is and because of the way we have gone in this world, have lost complete contact with the meaning of Easter. It has become a party. It has become a celebration by which people are attracted to the paint, the pomp, the circumstance, the sociality of it, and have completely lost the ability to understand that Easter is represented on this earth, in this time, as an event that takes place because of the way in which the world herself, the planet itself, rotates and turns and gives itself in its time to that which makes Easter in the planet possible. Because spring here is not spring somewhere else on the planet. We as human beings live in very tiny worlds of compressed thoughts, feelings that are all connected with ideas that deprive us of recognizing a far greater scale. Because if we examine this simple idea of rebirth in terms of Mother Nature, we can see that rebirth, the resurrection of life, the vine that gives the branch its energy, that puts out the buds, that makes the grapes, that makes the wine, we can see that that resurrection, that rebirth in nature is because of a descending scale. It's a descending scale. We can see it. Here's this great, beautiful sun that pours out all of this energy, but the earth herself, because of the way she sits and tilts on an axis, at times the earth can't receive the sun that creates this change in her magnetic field so that things burgeon and burst out. So the earth itself, going through changes, is similar to you and I in a way. And here's this sun, and as the earth addresses the sun, then all of a sudden the energy from that sun awakens in the earth That which makes this spring and its resurrection possible to see. Thank God that the fruits and the vegetables and the time comes when the soil warms. This is pretty important for us as beings taking part in this continual process. But not to lose the point, that rebirth, that resurrection is all due to a series of descending forces. The true resurrection, meaning the real rebirth, the possibility of a human being becoming a new man, a new woman, becoming a part of God's life in its totality, not in its appearance, has to do with the idea of an ascending scale, not a descending scale. And it's an important distinction to make that there is the rebirth that we see through descending forces, and then only to human beings is there the possibility of rebirth through ascending forces. Now, are there such ascending forces? Absolutely. Again, if we had eyes to see. You know what? If you just had more interest in what life is relative to the possibility of your growth, as opposed to you trying to always get what you think life is about, you would see it for yourself. Because the things that I speak to you about, men and women have been speaking of these things for thousands of years. This isn't new. Christ himself was the embodiment of an example by which a person was invited to see that there is indeed this ascending scale that has to do, and the only path to this resurrection or this rebirth. And maybe I should stop for a minute and explain to those of us who it isn't clear to, well, why do I want rebirth? Because your life's a wreck. Period. Because you're a mess. Because you're filled with violence. Because there's hatred in you. Because you're afraid of everyone. Because all you can do is think about yourself, and the more you think, the more you sink. Why do I want another life? Because I've made a complete mess of one. I've ruined the planet. Everything about me serves itself. Why do I want another life? Because maybe we're hoping that there's evidence of a life that doesn't sit and serve itself for selfish purposes. Maybe there's a life that serves something that's greater than itself. And if there is, that's what a person who has any awareness at all of what they have done and become longs to enter into. Longs to start becoming what it is that was seated in their heart in the beginning. Because were it not for the grace that is put into individuals by that very life that is the path, the ascending path home, there would be nothing that would even occur to a human being. Do you think that a pig wallowing in a mud thing thinks to itself, I wish I had a cleaner place to live? No, the muddier the better for the pig. Come on, everybody, let's get in the wallow. Let's throw mud around. Let's get just filthy. Pigs love that. So do human beings. Come on, everybody, let's make war. Come on, everybody, let's talk about other people when they're not here. Come on, everybody, let's discuss how depressed we are and why there's no hope for us. Come on, everybody, let's seed fear into the planet so we can talk about what we need to do so we can be safe later. That's a pig's wallow. So someday, God willing, a person says, all right, I don't want that. God, I don't want that. I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. I don't want to bring people down just by them looking at me. I don't want to spend the rest of my life wrapped in a cocoon in whose darkness I call myself the light because of how much I despise the conditions I found myself in. That man, that woman begins this beautiful task that we're going to address, which is rebirth. What does it mean? if I can see it, which I can, if I can see, for instance, and just one last point, and I can't spend too much time on this, but do you understand that the idea of this ascension has to do with what Christ mentioned, and it's not just Christ, this idea of I am the vine, you're the branches, of a life within a life, of a will within a will. And we can see will within will within will when we look at the descending forces, but it never occurs to us that the very evidence of the descending will is the evidence of an ascending will. But the reason that we're not interested in the evidence of an ascending will is because the parts of us that we know ourselves through know themselves through the parts, through the individual little instances in which we think about ourselves. Those little tiny thoughts and feelings that define us and confine us so well that we know who we are. The ascending will, the ascension of that intelligence goes from the particular to the whole. So the path back is not a path into particularity. It's a path back into the promise of something that transcends individuality as ourselves are currently given to understand it. And that's our problem, is that we understand ourselves through what we call our individual lives. That's how we relate to one another. But if we could see it with anything at all, we'd recognize that what we call our individuality is just the individual way in which we suffer over those things that we've agreed to communally to be valuable. And that everyone's trying to get more of what they think is valuable.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And I'll seed this into the talk right now. It isn't the objects in life. It isn't the possessions in life that are the illusion. It's their value that's the illusion. The things are real. What we attribute to them and hope to extract from them in possession of them with our minds is the sense of self, the valuable self that I am, that I have when I possess these ideas. So this idea that we're looking at about this ascension has to do with life within life, a scale of being. What else? Well, I am the vine, ye are the branches. And every other one of those passages in any great scripture. What is that talking about if not an actual scale of being? In my Father's kingdom there are many mansions. You can go through any kind of scripture and find evidence of a description, which is only a description, the possibility of an individual moving in this scale of being from a life that is increasingly, as it descends, divided and in time into something that is timeless. From something that is always fraught with change into something that is changeless. And this is the ascending scale, but the problem with this ascending scale, for us, if you will, is that in order to become and enter into it, we must lose ourselves as we know ourselves. That's the problem. But when we think about losing ourselves as we know ourselves, we don't lose ourselves. What we do is think about a new self we're going to be, and we gain that self as we think about losing ourselves. And that's not what it means to lose yourself. This is what's happened on the planet. This is the whole hideousness of present-day religion and the way it approaches life. that you're told over and over again that yours is the right to gain a life. All you have to do is imagine it. And that aberration, that horror of what's happened to ask and ye shall receive, the whole business of Christ talking about that ask and ye shall receive, knock and the door, had nothing whatsoever to do with what it's been turned in today. He was speaking prior to those moments about what was necessary for an individual to take part in this ascending scale so that they may have rebirth. So ask and receive had nothing to do with getting what the world says is valuable. Nothing. Ask and ye shall receive had to do with a special instruction that you and I are going to be learning about this very Easter day. So that for us, Easter won't be just, in quotes, a celebration. It'll be something that we live now and now and now. Because that's what real Easter is. That rebirth, if you can understand it, and I'll make the last point and move on. Here's spring, beautiful springtime on the earth in our part of the world. Beautiful springtime. But can you see that the forces that make spring possible for us are eternal relative to the spring that we get from them? In other words, the earth shifts her axis and changes so that in the change of the pitch of the earth, we're subjected to forces that were there all the time. All we have on our planet, because of the way of the world moving in our opposing seasons, is an instance in which now it changes and suddenly I'm subjected to something that was always there. In other words, the potential of spring exists everlastingly in a scale of being above that of the earth. How many of you can see the point? Because it's pretty important. There's the scale. There's an ascension, isn't that? From something that moves from season to season, as beautiful as it is, that's pretty, a lot of changes, isn't there? How many of you know the winter of your own heart? Then comes the spring, spring, and you do the Snoopy dance, but then summer comes and you start to get a little cracked. And then, oh no, winter's coming. Oh no, look, everything's bad, it's going cold, it's going dark. And human beings, because of the very nature that we're talking about, identify with every one of the seasons instead of understanding that the earth of themselves is going through a constant rotation and that the rotation of themselves relative to God's life, they only suffer because they don't have God's life. Instead, they have their own as identified with the seasons. I'm trying to show you a scale, a larger world in which all of the things that transpire in terms of seasons exist as seasons, but also as that which makes seasons possible. So that you have the possibility of an eternal spring. At the same time, you have a spring that represents that possibility if you can see it. Yes? Because I want to go on. All right. What has to happen? What is all this business about? You must lose one's life in order to gain it. Because without that, it's all ridiculous. It's ridiculous what human beings do. I'll touch one more time on this. You know, have you ever had the sensation that something's mocking you? Well, I'm serious. I mean, we don't really think in those terms, but we go out and we say, that's it, I'm going to do this. And I go and I use all my powers to get what I've imagined is going to make me a whole human being. And when I get what I've imagined is going to make me a whole human being, I fill myself with it, don't I? Fill myself. Oh, this is it. First I fill myself with the imagery. Then I go and I fill myself with whatever I think I need to do to keep the image there. And then I get there and I go, what the? This is, you know, is that all there is? Is that really it? And when you do that enough times, the power, in quotes, that you have to manifest in this world what you say will make you whole, you begin to realize, well, what good are these powers? Because all I really end up manifesting is something that mocks me in my emptiness for it. I thought this, I thought that. And I fill myself with it, and then I pursue it, and I get it, and then I'm sitting and I have to use my powers again because no more did I fill myself with that. Then what? Back to the point. That I filled myself not with an illusionary career, not an illusionary family. I filled myself with the illusion of the value of those things. And the value proved themselves to be not what I took them to be, else I wouldn't feel worthless again. Which is what happens, isn't it? So what is it then? What does it mean? What is actually in my power? See, it's such a beautiful question, and you're so afraid to ask it and then sit there and see the effect of the question. What's actually in my power? Is it in my power to make myself happy? Now, you'll say, yes, it is. Because I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to go someplace, and you watch me until I find someplace to be happy. Yes or no? And that's the human condition. I'm not happy here, but I'll be happy there. And you get there, and they go, well, I just mistook it, so I'm going to go there. And then that person moves into a smaller and smaller and smaller world within their own mind until all there is the darkness in it, period. And you better listen to me. But what about asking the question, what's in my power, and then using what's in my power to see what's not? What about asking the question, what's in my power, and then using what power I have to see what's not? It's not in my power to fill myself. Oh, no! I'm doing that for you. Oh, no! It's not in my power to fill myself, but what am I going to do with all my money? Or my dollar. If it's not in my power to fill myself, what am I going to do with that plan I have? That escape, that new relationship. If it's not my power to fill myself, what good is it fixing people? I'll let you think about that one. So here we're going to look at this. Take a deep breath. We're halfway through. Is there a difference? Now you need to think. So you better take two breaths because you need oxygen up there right now. Is there a difference between what makes me what I am and what I am? Is there a difference between what makes me what I am and what I am? Who wants to venture a guess? No, the fact is, the answer unequivocally is no, there's no difference. Even at the highest level, which we're not going to get to because there's not time. We're talking about our lives. And that's part of your problem. You've got such highfalutin spiritual images about yourself that you can't see your own toes. What does it mean? Is there a difference between what makes me what I am and what I am? What am I? What are you right now while you're sitting here? At any given moment in our lives, are we not, each and every one of us, the expressed effect of what we're in relationship with in that moment? Is that not what I am? Seen and unseen. I am the expressed effect of what I am in relationship with in this moment. So if I'm having unhappy thoughts, what am I? I'm a man with unhappy feelings. If I'm having happy thoughts, if I'm inspired, I'm in a relationship with something that's inspired, that's expressed in me, and for what that is in that moment, I am that. So I think it's critical to get this idea across that what we are all the time, what I am is what makes me what I am. What I am is what makes me what I am. And what makes me what I am are these endless relationships that are possible. Now, we're talking about what's in our power and what's not. What power does what I'm in relationship have to define me unless I give myself to that? Go slow. Here I am. I'm unhappy. I'm stressed. I'm worried. I'm frightened. I'm nervous. I'm confused. I don't get it. And all these things pouring through me, is this not, am I not in relationship with this anxiety, this nervousness, whatever it may be? And that's clearly what I am in that moment, isn't it? I'm expressing it. I'm its effect. But do I not have inside of myself the ability to be able to see that which I'm in relationship with in the moment? I do. And if I can see what I'm in relationship with in the moment, is it not also given to me to change that relationship? Yes or no? Yes, it is. Because it is what I give myself to. It is, look, we give ourselves to this relationship that defines us, whatever it may be in that moment. If we weren't giving ourselves to it, if we weren't identified with it, it couldn't define us. So here I am, and I'm caught up in a negative state of some kind. I'm thinking, I'm not changing, nothing's happening to me. Well, what am I in relationship with in a moment like that? Something positive, something good, or am I just caught up in the negativity? And is not that negativity justified to me, because then the same thought will look back in my own experience and say, yeah, oh, look at this, look at this, look at this. And then we talked about it, self-justification. That's it. Now, do you not give yourself to that when that is there? Important question. Am I not giving myself to that when it's there? How many of you understand the question? Here I am, and negative thoughts and feelings, or positive thoughts and feelings. This is a little easier for us. Here's something great going on. Don't you give yourself to that? Oh, this is great. And you give yourself to that. Now, the problem is that when things are going bad, you say to yourself, well, I'm not giving myself to that. It's taking me from myself. No! You're participating in it. You have the choice. We are being made moment by moment by moment by what we give ourselves to. And there's no moment where that isn't happening. We are being made. You are being made right now.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
The issue of free will isn't whether or not you will be made. The issue of free will is what you will be made into by your agreement. You can't choose the elements any more than the sun can choose not to use hydrogen. But within human beings, as part of the possibility of the ascending scale, is the choice the individual has to decide what he or she will give themselves to. Because right now, any moment of our lives, if we could see ourselves, we are always being made. Things are pouring into you, impressions. Reactions to the impressions. Reactions to the reactions. Endless. And all of that great force meeting in the center of an individual And that individual as the crux, the point in which all that's coming in, and that individual can choose by seeing these things whether or not they give themselves to that or not. Such an important idea, part of the present condition of captivity in the consciousness, is the human being's conditioned idea that all they can do is acquiesce to this conflict in themselves. Lies. Lazy people sit and say, I can't, there's nothing else I can do except accept this condition that I'm in. No, there is something else you can do. Listen, you can give it away. You can give what you've been given away. Take it in. I'm made for a moment. Here I am, captured by a negative thought, caught in an anxious feeling. I've been given that. One way or the other, here's these forces, here's these thoughts, it's starting to churn, I'm starting to identify with it. I've been given that, it's making me, wait, I can see it, and I can give away what I've been given. We talked about this, come wide awake, it's so important to get this idea. We said clearly that our power is not the power to fill ourselves, is it? Because what we fill ourselves with turns out to be nothing but trash. I've just told you then what our real power is. If my power is to give away what's making me what I am, then my power is the power to empty myself. My power is the power to lose myself, to lose the life that I am being given at the moment. That's my power, and that's resurrection. That's rebirth. Because you see, that which can see what is making it and that which gives it away doesn't pass with what it gives away, does it? I'm still here. What I am in reality exists independent of what makes me that. What I am exists independently of what makes me what I am. Look, have you ever been at the peak of a crisis, your mind racing 1,000 miles an hour, there's no way out, and all of a sudden you just let it all go? Did you die? No. What happened was suddenly there was a peace that was always there, but that you couldn't stand in because you were standing in what you were making of yourself and giving yourself to. So in that split second, in a manner of speaking, you went from being this revolving earth, going through all of these changes, into a higher scale of being that was integrated, wherein those kinds of conflicts cease to exist because they're not part of that greater order. Are you following this? I'm trying real hard. Take a breath. There was once a great king, and this great king had 3 children, and they were born only a day or two apart in subsequent years. And there was 2 boys and a girl, and the girl was the youngest of the 3. And at a certain age, the great king called his 3 children together and he said, "My children, you have reached the age in which it is now possible for me to give you what you have always been born to possess." And they looked and said, "What, Father?" "My kingdom. I will give my kingdom to one of you, but I can only give the kingdom to that one of you who pleases me the most, who understands what this kingdom actually is. And so I've arranged not a test, and I don't want you to feel afraid, because you will by your nature succeed or not accordingly. I'm giving each and every one of you 12 chests of gold. And you're to take these 12 chests, my children, and you're going to go out into this world, and you are going to use those 12 chests of gold to find out something about yourself, to discover for yourself what it is that you want, wish, work for, and then 4 years from now, you will tell me, you will show me what you have done with these 12 chests of gold that I've given you. And when you tell me and show me what you've done with these 12 chests of gold, I'll know which of you is the one intended to inherit the kingdom. 12 chests of gold, that's pretty good in itself, isn't it? How many of you think you just got the whole kingdom? Well, see, that's part of the human nature, isn't it? I don't know, no test, but I got 12 chests, that's not bad. And so 4 years goes by. And the father calls the three children together, and he starts with the eldest son, and he says, "Well, son, tell me what you did." And the eldest son claps his hands like this, and into the great hall where they're all sitting comes bearers, and they're carrying rolls of silk and buckets of spices and rare oils, and they lay them all in front of the king's feet. And the eldest son says to the father, "What I did, father, was I took the money and I built 5 ships, great ships, sailing ships, and I established trade routes between our country and other countries. And this is the fruit of what I've done, father. And I want you to know that I'm going to give you a third of everything that I've taken in." Father smiles, says, "That's well done, son." And points to the next son, middle son, and says, "Son, would you please tell me what it is that you've done?" And claps his hands like that. And in walks 2 elegantly dressed servants carrying 2 small chests. And they walk up to the seat of the throne and they open these chests. And inside of these chests filled with rare gems, beautiful gems. Son says to the father, "Father, what I've done is I took the money that you gave me and I bought 7 mines and I enlarged them and I worked them and I'm profitable now." And he said, "These are just a small portion of what's there. And father, I'm giving you 49% of everything that comes out of it." Now you're laughing, and maybe that's appropriate. But the father gave the boys and the girl the money. "This is yours. Go do with it what you will. Make a life for yourself." And that's what they did, and they succeeded. Why do you scoff at that? One gives a third of all that he gets from the trade route. The other 49% of everything that comes out. And the father looks and says, "That's well done, son." And then he looks to his daughter. And the daughter smiles at the father, and the youngest walks up, and she's carrying a small bottle, just one small bottle like this. And the father looks at her, and he smiles, and she smiles back, and she pulls the cork out of the bottle, and she pours a small cup of wine for her father. Father says, "This is for you, father." And the 2 brothers in the back are snickering. Father takes a taste of the draft of the wine and says, "This is indeed most delicious wine." And she says, "Yes, father." She said, "But it's just the first harvest. This is just the first pressing. You see," she said, "what I did, father, was that I took the money you gave me and I bought 100 acres of those westward facing slopes over to the side of the kingdom there. And we cleared them. We worked hard. We got rid of all that was in the way and we planted the vineyard there. And this first pressing is just an indication of what's to come." And then she reached in her back pocket and she had a small piece of folded paper. And she handed that to her father. And her father said, "Well, what's this?" She said, "Father, this is the deed to the estate and to the winery. I'm giving it all to you." And the father looks at his daughter and says, "Well, sweetheart, why would you do such a thing? Why would you give me what you've done, what you've made for yourself?" And she said, "Because, father, yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory. And whatever it is that I have in my life, including these lands, I only have because of your goodness towards me."
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about Friendly Ongoing Classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
You see, we have it all upside down. This present mind and its sensory-laden apparatus, the things that look out at the world and try to figure out who we are and what to do in order to make ourselves complete. The only way it knows itself is by what it hangs on to. It's all you know yourself by. It's all you know yourself by, what you hang on to. You don't have to be a wizard, an Einstein. Even if you're not capable of being awake enough to see it taking place, you can look back and see that essentially what I hang on to is what went wrong and what I want to make right. I think about myself incessantly. Isn't that hanging on to something? I relive. I can't tell you how much I relive. My mind just does it by itself. And I give myself to that relationship, don't I? And then when it gets too painful, what I'm reliving, then I imagine a time in which I won't have to relive anything. And then I give myself to that relationship that is, by the way, produced by fear. The hope to escape something is not a positive action, people. It's rooted in the absolute essential drive inside of a person to escape a disturbance that's inside of them. And we've talked about how the disturbance seeds in us what we call the divine. It's going to free me if I just do this. No, it's not going to free you if you just do this. Why? Because of what you are giving yourself to. You give to gain. Please think of it. We give to gain. That is not the giving of the stars. That is not the giving of spring. Spring doesn't give to gain. Spring gives because it empties her. She empties herself. We must empty ourselves. And you can... This is what... Remember I said, what power is ours? Mine is the power to empty myself. To give at any given moment that I'm aware of it. Everything that I can see is making me what I am. Every passing thought, every feeling, every reaction, every wish to be approved, every feeling of nervousness, every thought of fear, every plan for tomorrow. You have to see for yourself these incessant and constant changing dynamic inside of the human being. Thoughts and feelings are whirling around, being stimulated by events outside. And here's a person, and all they do is just sit and let all of that churning and turning inside of them produce the next illusion. And why is it the next illusion? Because I believe that I will escape this by getting into that. And that doesn't exist without the churning of this. It's a linear. It's in time. It isn't the ascending scale. The ascending scale, the vertical scale, the scale, the true scale of resurrection, has to do with a person understanding that resurrection is not something that takes place in time. Therefore, thought can't approach it. Look, how many of you understand that you're always trying to resurrect yourselves? Let's get right down to maybe I better pull this down to earth a little bit. Do you understand that? Here's how what it means to resurrect myself. I'm not happy with where I am and what I have and you and anybody else, and therefore I will be different tomorrow. Ergo, I will have a plan. I've just resurrected myself, haven't I? But how many times have you resurrected yourself? Can you say it? It's actually impossible, because the brain is literally resurrecting itself over and over and over again, never seeing that it isn't really resurrecting itself, it's reincarnating itself on a denigrated scale. Because anything that makes a copy of a copy, didn't you ever see that movie? Huh? It was a very cute movie. I can't think of the fellow's name. Huh? Multiplicity, yeah. He makes a copy of himself, and the first copy is not that bad, but then the copy makes a copy, and it's and each copy gets subsequently more stupid. That's what we call resurrection, which is hope in things seen in a time to come. The real resurrection is not in things seen, and it's now. Am I willing to see right at this very moment what we're talking about, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I can see myself, I can find myself making something of myself? How many of you know what it means to make something of yourself? Do you understand? This is, goes on almost unseen. Every time you think about yourself, you're making something of yourself, aren't you? And don't you make something of yourself when somebody doesn't make enough out of you? Or when someone threatens what you've made of yourself, don't you want to remake them and then remake yourself? Every time you're in a rush, are you not making yourself? See, I'm not happy where I am, but when I get over to where I'm going, then I'll be okay. Are you not making yourself? You must empty yourself of the self that makes you, which is this thought nature. Because you can see it doing it. You can have direct relationship in the moment with the entire process of these forces that are forever coming up with the next version of yourself. What always begins, by the way, each new version of ourselves begins with the renunciation of who we've been. Has it not like that? Only the renunciation of who we've been, I don't want me, I don't like the way I am, never has in it, I'm going to just empty myself of myself. Instead, I'm just going to recreate myself according to the next best 2005 model. So you can do what we're talking about by beginning to recognize that it is given to you, the one power that I have as a human being, is to give moment to moment to moment back to my Father what I have been given. Isn't that what she did? She was the one who inherited the kingdom. Because she understood that whatever she had, whatever it was that she had because it was given to her. And because it was given to her, and she understood that it was part of a greater kingdom than herself, by giving it back to her Father, she wasn't trying to make points. You ever try to make points? No, it was the natural thing to do. What you have given me, I give you. What you have given me, I give you. And in giving you what you have given me, I empty myself so that you can fill me again. Is that not rebirth? If you can see it, is that not rebirth? Only there's no icons, there's nothing sitting on a cross someplace, there's nothing going on except for an individual's awareness of themselves and the process that God gave them by which they can ascend from a divided, fragmented person into increasing levels of wholeness. And what's more whole than a continual process of emptying oneself of what one is given? But you see, we have a problem, don't we, Houston? We have a problem, Houston. We do. I really want to blast off, But I want to be me. I want heaven, and I want to be in it. Rebirth is not a sleeker you. The truth is that rebirth isn't a condition at all in which a person, as they presently conceive of it, knows themselves as someone who is reborn. Because the true rebirth is the entrance into a life that rebirth is the activity of, just as dying is its brother and sister. Moment to moment to moment. And the mind can't do that, because the mind gives rise to itself so that it can measure itself and then give birth to itself when it doesn't measure up. But within us, each and every one of us, is this Christ, is this life that I'm talking to you about, whose very existence and the whole point of this exercise is to understand that whenever I find myself being made, and if you want to know, if you need eyes to understand what it means that you're making yourself, all you have to do is understand that whenever you are suffering over your life, you have allowed yourself to be made into that by something that despises you, and you give yourself to it. You give yourself to what despises you when you suffer over yourself. Otherwise, you wouldn't be suffering over yourself. You'd be using those forces to liberate yourself from that suffering. And that's the task. And it's bigger than that and more beautiful than that, because the task is also to give up every, in the moment of great beauty, in the moment of the finest pressing of the wine that you've been able to produce in your life, you give yourself up there too. You give that back. Why? Because the emptying and the filling on God's life, that universal process that isn't connected to the individual movement of things, that belongs to what is changeless, even though it is holding within it everything that is changing. Then you have the real life, because you are part and parcel of the universe of God's life, that you were made in the image of that. And how about that for one last thought? How is it that men and women can believe they're supposed to make something of themselves when they were already made in the image of God? You look at your culture, you look at the world you live in, the way you approach life all day long, day in and day out. If you're not making something of yourself, you're berating yourself for not having made something good enough. Illusion. Illusion. Begin now. Do it right now, see? I give it all. I empty myself and I leave it empty. That's the path. I leave it empty, because if I give myself with the idea of gaining, then I have filled myself. Empty yourself, let God fill you. Empty yourself, let God fill you, and you will know what rebirth is.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.